Michael France has introduced the topic by focusing on particular ethnic conflicts and ethnic groups, some of whom have rather, from our point of view, curious religions. And I'm going to begin this session and begin my presentation by focusing on a particular ethnic group that does have, I will argue, a very peculiar religion. This particular ethnic group is very rarely written about as an ethnic group, but it does have considerable power in the world, and that group is, in fact, Protestant Americans. And I'll be talking about the bizarre religion as it has developed of this bizarre ethnic group. For those of you who heard the introductory presentation yesterday by Richard Gamble, a magnificent and splendid presentation called Save Your Nation that went back to St. Paul and to St. Augustine and continued through Woodrow Wilson, I think you'll see that my presentation, at least my intent of my presentation, is to have much in common with the conceptions that Richard Gamble put forward. I'm going to argue that American foreign policy has been and continues to be shaped by the Protestant origins of the United States. But the Protestantism that has shaped American foreign policy over two centuries has not been the original religion, but a series of successive departures from it down the scale of what might be called the Protestant declension. We are now at the end point of this declension, and the Protestantism that shapes American foreign policy today is a peculiar heresy of the original religion, not the Protestant Reformation, but what might be called the Protestant Deformation. After the end of the Cold War, and now in the era of what has sometimes been called the Global Age, and at the beginning of the 21st century, the United States is left as the sole superpower. And therefore, this Protestant Deformation is at its greatest, even global influence. But because it is such a peculiar religion, and indeed is correctly seen as a fundamental and fatal threat by all the other religions, its pervasive sway is generating intense resistance and international conflict. Protestantism was a protest against the form that the Christian religion had taken in the Roman Catholicism of the late Middle Ages and the Renaissance. The Reformation was an effort to reform the Christian religion back to the original faith expressed in the New Covenant or New Testament of the Bible. The Protestant reformers protested against numerous features of the Roman Catholic Church, including such familiar ones as the authority of the Pope, the role of the Virgin Mary, and the meaning of indulgences. But the really central and fundamental issues involved the way that the Christian believer reached a state of salvation and the roles that the priestly hierarchy and the parish community played in the process. The Roman Catholic Church taught that the Christian believer reached salvation through the mediation of the priestly hierarchy and through participation in the parish community. The hierarchy and the community in combination yield the surest path to salvation, which was participation in communal sacraments and rituals that were administrated by the hierarchy. The Protestant reformers protested against the idea that the believer achieved salvation through a hierarchy or community, or even the two in combination. Although many Protestant reformers accepted hierarchy and community for certain purposes, such as church governance and collective undertakings, they rejected them for the most important of purposes, reaching the state of salvation. Rather, the believer receives, not achieves, receives salvation through an act of grace by God. This grace produces in its recipient the faith in God and in salvation that converts him to a believer. The believer can achieve greater knowledge of God, however, through his reading of the Holy Scriptures. The Protestant reformers place great emphasis on the Word, as evidenced in the written words of the Bible. But this reading does not necessarily require the interpretations of a hierarchy or a community. Indeed, these might actually impede the right interpretation of the Bible by the individual believer. All religions are unique, but Protestantism is more unique than all the others. No other religion is so critical of hierarchy and community or of the traditions and customs that go with them. Indeed, most other religions are based upon hierarchy or community. In addition to Roman Catholicism, also Eastern Orthodoxy, Islam, Hinduism, Confucianism, and even to a degree, Buddhism. At its doctrinal base, however, Protestantism is anti-hierarchy and anti-community. The Protestant reformers sought to remove hierarchy and community so the individual Christian believer could have a direct relationship with God. more accurately and more subtly, so that the individual believer could have a relationship with God directly through the second person of the Holy Trinity, Jesus Christ, and so that he could receive salvation from God directly through the third person of the Holy Trinity, the Holy Spirit. The removal of hierarchy and community, traditions and customs of any earthly intermediaries between the individual and God strips away, at least for the most important purposes, salvation, any local, parochial, cultural, or national characteristics of the believer. In principle, grace, faith, and salvation can be received by anyone in the world. They are truly universal, or Catholic in the small c sense, in the original sense of that latter term, Catholic. The Protestant reformers saw the vast variety of cultures and nations through a universal perspective, one that was even more universal than that of the Roman Catholic Church itself. In the three centuries after the Reformation, this Protestant rejection of hierarchy and community in regard to salvation spread to their rejection in regard to other domains of life as well. First, some Protestant churches rejected hierarchy and community in regard to church governance and local undertakings. This was especially the case in the new United States, where the conjunction of the open frontier and the disestablishment of state churches enabled the flourishing of new, unstructured, and unconstraining denominations. By the beginning of the 19th century, the Protestant rejection of hierarchy and community had spread to important arenas of temporal or secular life. Again, this was especially the case in the new United States. In the economic arena, the elimination of hierarchy, monopoly or oligopoly, and community, guilds or trade restrictions, meant the establishment of the free market. In the political arena, the elimination of hierarchy, monarchy or aristocracy, and community, traditions and customs, meant the establishment of liberal democracy. However, the free market could not be so free, nor the liberal democracy so liberal, that they became anarchy. Although they can no longer be ordered by hierarchy and community, by this spread of Protestantism to other elements of life beyond salvation, although they could no longer be ordered by hierarchy or community, by tradition and custom, they had to be ordered by something. That something reflected the Protestant emphasis on written words and was a version of the written covenant between individual Protestant believers. In the economic arena, this became the written contract. In the political arena, it was the written constitution. The Protestant Reformation was giving birth to what by the early 20th century had become the American Creed. The fundamental elements of that secular creed, liberal democracy, free markets, constitutionalism, the rule of law, were already fully in place in the United States of the early 19th century. This outward spread of the Protestant rejection of hierarchy and community from the arena of salvation to the arenas of economics and politics was driven by a peculiar and particular inner dynamic, or rather decline, within the Protestant faith itself. Today, almost half a millennium after the beginning of the Protestant Reformation in 1517, we can discern six stages of what might be called the Protestant declension. Now, I won't have time to go into any detail what these six stages are. I'll be focusing on the very last stages, the ones that we are living through today. But in an actual paper that can be put on the web, I will describe these in more detail. But let me just mention the six stages. The very first stage in the Protestant Reformation was salvation by grace. But as years went on, especially in the second or third generation that had not experienced this actual born-again salvation by grace and were uneasy about were they graced or not, then we entered into a phase, discussed by Max Weber famously, of grace evidenced through work. But then as further years went on and further generations, salvation began to be perceived as coming from works, precisely the opposite of what the original reformers had seen. But as grace faded and emphasis on works developed further, we entered into a fourth phase, and that's what I call the Unitarian transformation. As the focus on grace faded, so too amongst some there was a fading of the focus upon the agencies of grace, Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. And thus Reformed Protestantism actually began through a process of declension to become Unitarianism. Woodrow Wilson, although the son of a Presbyterian minister and sometimes thought as a Presbyterian, in his actual belief, I think, was much more a Unitarian. And that in part explains why he was so ready, in the words of Richard Gamble yesterday, to begin to put America at the center rather than Jesus Christ at the center of his faith, and to see America as the savior nation. The fifth stage in the Protestant declension was the American Creed, when the abstract and remote God, the supreme being or divine providence of Unitarianism, disappeared altogether. Now the various Protestant creeds were replaced by the American Creed, which reaches fullest articulation in the first half of the 20th century. As I've already mentioned, the elements of the American Creed were free markets and equal opportunity, free elections and liberal democracy, and constitutionalism and the rule of law. The American Creed definitely did not include as elements hierarchy, community, trusting, tradition, and custom. Although the American Creed was not itself Protestant, it was clearly the product of a Protestant culture and was a sort of secularized version of Protestantism. The sixth and final stage in the Protestant declension was reached only in the 1970s, in the last generation. Now the American Creed was replaced by the universal conception of human rights. Or more accurately, the elements of the American Creed were generalized into universal goods. Finally, in the 1990s, with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the communist ideology, with the stagnation of German and European social alternatives to capitalism, such as the German social market, and the stagnation of Japanese organized organization of capitalism, all alternatives to a fully American-style free market, with the stagnation of those and the collapse of the communist ideology, and recently with the difficulties in the Asian conceptions of developmental capitalism, all the alternatives to the American economic and political conceptions have been discredited, at least temporarily. Let me focus a bit more on this last or sixth stage of the Protestant declension, universal human rights, and the Protestant Reformation. In the 1970s, American political and intellectual elites began to promote the notion of universal human rights as a fundamental goal of American foreign policy. This conception took the central elements of the American Creed and carried them to a logical conclusion and to a universal extent. It was the conjunction of factors that caused the American elites to embrace universal human rights at that time. First, those elites who had condemned the U.S. intervention in the Vietnam War needed to develop a new doctrine for American foreign policy to replace the doctrine of containment, which in their eyes was now discredited. Secondly, the surge in U.S. trade and investment in newly industrializing countries beyond Europe and Japan caused some elites to see a need to develop a new doctrine for American foreign policy that could be applied to a wide variety of different and often difficult cultures and countries. Third, however, and most importantly, in explaining this transition to human rights as the core idea of American foreign policy in the 1970s and since, third and most importantly were changes within the American people themselves. America was changing from an industrial to a post-industrial economy, and thus from a producer to a consumer mentality. It was also changing from a modern to a postmodern society. And thus from an ideology of what has been called possessive individualism to an ideology of expressive individualism. The new post-industrial, consumer, postmodern, expressive individualist America was embodied in the so-called me generation, i.e. the baby boomer generation. For them, the rights, and certainly not the responsibilities, of the individual, and definitely not of the community, were the highest, indeed the only good. In the new ideology, human rights are thus seen as the rights of individuals. The individual's rights are independent of any hierarchy or community, traditions or customs in which the individual might be situated. This means that human rights are applicable to any individual, anywhere in the world. They are universal and not merely communal or national. Thus, there is a close logical connection between the rights of the individual and the universality of these rights. Individual rights are universal rights, and universal rights are individual rights. Numerous social analysts have noted the United States in the past two decades has become a new kind of political society, what has been called the Republic of Choice. It is characterized by the rights revolution in law, freedom of choice in politics, consumer sovereignty in economics, question authority in attitudes, and expressive individualism in ideology. In regard to spiritual life, one manifestation of this new mentality is New Age. The ideology of expressive individualism thus reaches into all aspects of society. It is a total philosophy. The result appears to be totally opposite from the totalitarianism of the state, but it is a sort of totalitarianism of the self. Both totalitarianisms are relentless in breaking down intermediate bodies and mediating institutions that stand between the individual and the highest powers or the widest forces. With the totalitarianism of the state, the highest powers are the authorities of the nation state. With the totalitarianism of the self, the widest forces are the agencies of the global economy. Expressive individualism, with its contempt for and protest against all hierarchies, communities, traditions, and customs, represents the logical conclusion and the ultimate extreme of the secularization of the Protestant religion. The Holy Trinity of original Protestantism, the supreme being of Unitarianism, the American nation of the American creed, have all been dethroned and replaced by the imperial self. The long declension of the Protestant Reformation has reached its endpoint in the Protestant Deformation. The Protestant Deformation is a Protestantism without God, a reformation against all forms. The foreign policy of the Republic of Choice of the Protestant Deformation is universal human rights. But during the Cold War, there were constraints on the full pursuit of this project. As long as the United States was engaged in its great bipolar struggle with the Soviet Union and with communist ideology, it had to show some respect for and make some concessions to the particularities of hierarchy, community, traditions, and customs in the countries that it needed as allies. The collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991 and the discrediting of communist ideology removed much of the necessity for such compromises and concessions. Now the United States could be unrestrained and uncontained in pursuing its grand project of universal human rights. At the same time, the spread of the global economy and the competition amongst national governments to liberalize their economies in order to attract foreign capital legitimized the idea of free markets. Finally, the election of Bill Clinton in 1992 marked the arrival to political power of that generation of Americans who are the true believers in expressive individualism, the baby boomers. The Clinton administration promoted universal human rights more than any previous administration. It saw human rights, free markets, and liberal democracies as the solutions to virtually every human problem. As has been discussed by Samuel Huntington and many others, this universalist and individualist project of the United States has generated resentment and resistance in societies whose religious traditions are different from the Christianity, and certainly the Protestantism, of the West. Huntington has called this the clash of civilizations, a struggle between the West and the rest. There has been almost no resistance in those nations with a Protestant tradition. There has been some resistance in those with a Roman Catholic tradition, and there has been the greatest resistance in those with an Islamic or a Confucian tradition. Virtually all nations whose religious tradition is Protestantism have by now adopted some version of the human rights ideology, if not the full extent of expressive individualism and the Republic of Choice. These are Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the Netherlands, the Scandinavian countries, and even Britain and Germany. More resistant, but now being driven into at least free markets and liberal democracy, but not full expressive individualism, are those nations whose religious tradition is Roman Catholic. France, Italy, the former corporatist countries of Spain and Portugal, and the former communist countries in Eastern Europe, and the former authoritarian and protectionist countries of Latin America. However, Pope John Paul II, has consistently and comprehensively criticized particular elements of the American project, i.e. liberal ideology and a completely unconstrained market economy, in several of his great papal encyclicals. The Pope clearly believes that the liberal program, the Protestant Deformation, represents the idolatry of the self. The major resistance to this America universalist and individualist project has been mounted by countries with either an Islamic or a Confucian tradition. The contemporary modernized versions of Islam and Confucianism represent a counterpoint to the most secularized version of Protestantism, a sort of counter-deformation to the Protestant Deformation. However, Islam is split amongst numerous states, no one of which has much prospect of becoming a great power in international politics. And further, the continuing crisis in several major Asian economies has discredited, to some extent, Asian-style capitalism based upon Asian values of hierarchy and community, be those values rooted in Islam, as in Indonesia or Malaysia, or in Confucianism, as in Japan, South Korea, and the overseas Chinese communities. We cannot now know the outcome of this clash of civilizations, this struggle between the West and the rest. These wars have secularized religion between the Protestant Reformation and the Counter-Reformation. But the ultimate answer may lie in the character of the Protestant Reformation itself. The Protestant Reformation was a prime movement in the making of the modern era. 500 years later, the Protestant Reformation is a prime movement in the making of the postmodern era. The Protestant Reformation was the most unique of all religions. The Protestant Reformation seeks the end of all religions, or rather, it seeks to replace the worship of God with the expression of the self. The Protestant Reformation brought into being the first nation states and the first great powers of the modern era. First Netherlands, and then Britain as sea powers, first Sweden, and then Prussia as land powers. The most reformed Protestant of all nations was the United States, and it became the greatest of all great powers as well. Much of the power of the United States can be traced to the energy, efficacy, efficiency, and organization that was a legacy of the reform of Protestantism. However, the Protestant Reformation, because of its universalist and individualist creed, seeks the end of all nation states and to replace loyalty to America with gratification of oneself. It relentlessly undermines the authority of any government or the legitimacy of any nation, even that of the United States, the very superpower which promotes that creed, the Protestant Reformation throughout the world. In his The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Edward Gibbon once wrote that the Roman Empire spread the Christian religion throughout the ancient world, but the Christian religion then undermined the Roman Empire. Now the American Empire is spreading the Protestant Reformation throughout the modern world, but the Protestant Reformation is itself beginning to undermine the American Empire.